We've got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Chad Hufford. He is the founder of Veritas Wealth Management. We had a great conversation. It started with two truths and a lie. We talked about the importance of agency and ownership and understanding what we have control over, what we don't have control over, and what best to focus on. It's going to lead us to happiness and success. We talked about the importance of positioning yourself for success and then how you get the courage to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves. We talked about the importance of consistently doing what it takes to be in that position. And we talked about the importance of how you think about and your perspective as it pertains to the work that you do, and more importantly, transitioning into a happy and successful retirement so that you have exactly that, a happy and successful retirement, and you don't find yourself broke or unhappy and disillusioned with everything. And we finished up with an awesome difference-making tip. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Chad, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
All right. Two truths and a lie. Well, even though I run a financial planning firm that manages about $500 million, I have no formal financial education. I had a pet wolf growing up, and I killed a bear with a bow and arrow when I was 13.
Those are amazing. No formal financial education. And then it gets considerably just different. You killed a bear with a bow and arrow at age 13, and you had a pet wolf growing up. Oh my goodness. No way you had a pet wolf, Chad.
Actually, I did.
Nice. What was your pet wolf's name?
It wasn't very creative. It was White Fang. Named it after. Oh. So the Disney movie came out in like the late 80s. And I was like, that is awesome. I have to have one of these. And bought him from a musher here in Alaska. So back then you didn't need a permit for him. And they actually raised hybrid wolves for movies. So some of the lineage of my dog was actually in that Disney movie. So,
okay. Awesome. We're going to have to circle back on musher because I bet it's a very small percentage of listeners who will know what that is. So did you, in fact, which one was the lie?
The lie was the bear.
Okay.
I was 12.
Oh, sure. Well, that is amazing. And were you bear hunting or you're just in your backyard and a bear attacked you and you had to kill it with a bow and arrow?
You know, we've had them come through our yard. So just to give you some context, Anchorage is a real town. It's a real city. Like we've got the Costco, the movie theaters, the mall. It's about 300,000 people. But we lived on kind of the outskirts. And that's what allowed me to have a hybrid wolf as a pet, because it was nothing but thousands of acres behind us of parkland. So we had bears and moose come through our yard, but I was actually purposely hunting with a bow and arrow. It wasn't just, taking a walk in the neighborhood and this thing charges after me. So,
right. Okay. And what is a musher?
So a musher is somebody who races dog sleds, which again, yeah, probably not something in Phoenix, Arizona, you're going to run into a lot, but here in Alaska, we have the Iditarod, which is, it's always in February, but it's like 1,000-mile dog sled race. And it's pretty intense. So these guys raced in it and they raised dogs for other mushers. And yeah, that's my story. I'm sticking to it, George.
It's awesome. I mentioned I grew up in Duluth, Minnesota, and we had the John Bear Grease sled dog race every year. So I'm aware of mushers and sled dogs and all that good stuff, but just at a very different level, I suppose. So no formal financial education?
I did not. No, I actually, my degree is in biochemistry, but I grew up in the financial world. And one of the things so my original plan was to go into medicine, but I started getting interested in finance and realizing I had all these tools I'd grown up with. I just thought it was normal the way that I grew up, but I didn't realize how valuable that practical education was. So I asked my dad, I was like, should I be going getting a finance degree? So he's got a finance degree and an econ degree. And he said, before you start any formal education, you need some practical application, because if everything that they taught in finance classes worked, then more people would be wealthy. But what works in theory in a classroom doesn't actually apply to real life, because we are psychological human beings, and it comes down to behavior, not just the tools. You can't, you know, you can't give somebody a faster car and expect them to be a better driver. You have to teach them how to operate that tool. And the finance industry is all about, hey, let's give you a faster investment or a more luxurious investment. But we don't actually teach people at a fundamental level how to operate better. So he wanted me to build that practical base first. And he was already retired, so, you know, he had the time to kind of work with me and mentor me. And but then he also encouraged me to study people who not just created wealth for themselves as a one-off, but consistently created wealth for others and did it in a real meaningful way. Because there's a huge difference between somebody who is, you know, a tenured professor with a pension and everybody else. And not to say there's anything wrong with that. Like, if you're a tenured professor, you're listening, that's awesome that you have that kind of job security. And if you have a pension, that's great. It's just most people don't have that. So to be able to live in the real world with all of the uncertainty that people face when they're planning for their futures, and to actually create a pathway. So I studied people that did that, that created abundance and wealth in the lives of others and did it repeatedly. So we knew it wasn't just a one-off. People like Nick Murray, Dave Ramsey, Larry Burkett, some of these other folks, Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, they were able to duplicate their process. It wasn't just a fluke.
I love it. Well, what is top of mind for you right now?
Well, top of mind for me right now is we're looking at this crazy world around us, and everybody is, they're worried about the election. They're worried about interest rates. They're worried about what's the economy going to do? Are we going to go into recession? Were we in a recession? Who knows? But everybody, George, we're worried about the things we can't control. And I think what's happening is they're overlooking their own agency. They're overlooking their own ownership. And by focusing on what they can't control, they're missing what they can. And I think there's a lot of opportunities out there that people are either afraid of, they're viewing an opportunity as an obstacle, or they're just simply missing altogether because the media and my industry is taking everybody's focus, and we're force feeding them a lot of distractions and misinformation.
I think personal agency is one of the most important things that I have.
It absolutely is. And if I tell you everything important, George, is outside of your control, who's going to be elected president, what interest rates are going to do, what the inflation rate in this next year is going to be, what the stock, you will eventually learn helplessness, because I've told you that everything that is going to change the financial trajectory of your life, you can't do anything about. You're just now waiting on the sidelines, your own life, hoping for some good luck. And yes, luck helps, but it's not necessary. And I that's a big thing that we preach is personal agency. We're not going to worry about everything you can't control. Does it have an impact? Absolutely, it does. But we're going to focus on your behaviors, your choices. I mean, just one example is everybody's focus on investment returns. Is that important? Absolutely. But between this growth stock mutual fund and that growth stock mutual fund, who knows which one is going to outperform the other. But we focus so much on investment rate that we miss investing rate, the rate, my savings rate, the rate at which I actually add to that investment. So if your large cap growth fund performs at 9.8 over the next 20 years and mine gets 9.3, but we're both broke on a park bench at 80 because we didn't save enough, what difference does it make the relative performance of those funds? So people need to focus on savings rate more than they look at return rate.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I think so much really powerful stuff there. Learned helplessness. I wrote down taught helplessness. You know, if somebody tries to just spoon feed it or shove it down my throat enough, and if I'm a young person, it's probably going to stick just because I don't know any better. Not to go crazy off the rails here, but that's the problem from my perspective with a lot of isms, is if I think that there's some boogeyman out there who's going to get me, and I'm taught that from an early age, I think that that deprives me of my agency, but that's neither here nor there. But it certainly applies to every aspect of life, certainly personal finance and your overall success.
It absolutely does. We all bring biases into the investing game. We all have a lens through which we view whatever ism that you think might be out to get you, or just any circumstance. We all have a lens and a bias, and sometimes we can't change that. Like, you've got things that happen in your life, your childhood, that I can try to understand and empathize, but I can't see it and view it the way you did. And you can't see things the way I grew up homeschooled in the 80s, long before it was cool. I've got enough stuff to keep therapists really busy for a long time. But just one example is, like, back in 2022, again, everybody was afraid of the recession. And we had a lot of people, my industry especially, talking about the crash and this market decline and bear market and all that. Our clients were saying, like, well, the best companies in the world are on sale. How can I get more money in there? Exact same circumstance. You had some of the best businesses in the world at a discount, but most people were running away from it. And then you had a handful of people viewing it as an opportunity. The difference is the bias that we bring into the world, that we bring into that situation. So I think you're 100% right on, George. And that's a big thing we try to do, is have to shift people's perspectives. We can't force them to think differently, but can we get them to look at an old problem in a new way, just long enough to see, okay, do I need to readjust my thinking patterns a little bit?
I'm fond of saying that I chop wood all summer, not because I want to be burning the wood during the summer months, but I need to be burning it in the winter. So it's just it's all about staying ready. And, you know, I'm 45 and I've missed, just in my earlier years, opportunities to buy when the market crashes. And I don't want to miss those opportunities ever again. So I need to be prepared.
And to have the courage to step into that, because it isn't easy. There's actually a proverb, I believe it's Proverbs 19, that talks about plowing during winter. The fool does not plow during winter, but he will starve during the harvest. And you think about, like, who's going to plow during the winter? Like, if there's snow on the ground, but it's doing the difficult thing in the midst of adversity. And that's what buying during a downturn is. It doesn't feel like a good thing. Just like getting out and going for a run in Anchorage, Alaska, when it's 45 degrees in the morning, even though it's July. And it doesn't feel good, but it's paying that price now to reap a reward in the future. And that's what what everybody needs to do, is have that better relationship with their future self. So that investment they make in the short term feels less like a sacrifice and more like what it should, an investment.
So how do I get that courage to be able to recognize, okay, this is my opportunity, I'm going to pull the trigger on buying when things are down?
I think one of the biggest things, George, is having a plan. If you're building a house and you know what that house needs to look like, and you have a blueprint connecting where you want to be in the future with what you're doing today, and a certain tool or material comes on sale, and you're like, oh, I need that for my financial house. You already have a game plan. You can see where that thing fits in. But if you don't, if you're just wandering through the aisles of Home Depot, the tendency is to pick the most popular tools, not necessarily the tools that you need. So I think having a strategic game plan, a roadmap, a blueprint, however you want to look at it, but something that connects your current actions with what you're building in the future. So when you go through those difficult periods, which I believe are opportunity, you're more likely to see them as such and less likely to see them as an obstacle, because you can connect that hard action in the short term with the payoff in the long run.
Opportunities versus obstacles. We can look at the same scenario, and if you think it's an opportunity, you're going to act differently than if you think that this is an obstacle.
Well, that just reminds me of an episode you recently released on work, and you talked about work shouldn't be something that we avoid. Like, that's our culture right now, is we look at work as an obstacle to be avoided rather than an opportunity to be embraced. And I get it. Like, there's tough things with work and things like that, but that's exactly what I thought of when I was thinking of the episode. If we looked at work as an opportunity to express our truest self, now some jobs would be hard to do that, but we can view it as an opportunity rather than as an obstacle to be avoided. So I not to pat you on the back too much and toot your horn, George, but that was, people do not understand how how precious that message is. Just within this week, just yesterday, I had a retired law enforcement officer, and he spent 20 years in crimes against children, a job I would never want. And he retired recently, and I told him, I was like, you've got to find something to retire to. You're unplugging from this thing, which is stressful. It was hard. It was probably taking years off your life. So I'm glad you're retiring, but you've got to plug into something else. And he said, I had so much stress in my job. It was hard to take that advice seriously. But now 2 or 3 years has gone by, and he's like, I've dealt with some really strange emotions. And I've realized how valuable that advice was to find meaningful work to plug into. Because even though he unplugged from something that was stressful and was probably wearing on his health, he needed something else to step into. It's, you know, we don't want retirement to be like you're running away from a burning building. It should be more about what you're chasing. And one of the metaphors I give is, you know, if you watch any nature show, and I've got 6 kids, so we watch a lot of nature shows, but you watch like a nature show on Netflix and you see like a leopard chasing a gazelle or something like that. They're both running as hard as their bodies will let them. But only one is having any fun because one is being chased and one is chasing something. They're both running with the same effort and intensity, but only one's enjoying it.
That's awesome. I love everything about that. So what a great couple of great stories there, particularly, well, they're both really good. The law enforcement professional dealing with crimes against children, I mean every day must have been just the most intense thing in the world, and just so committed to the work and just so heavy and important that, oh my goodness, you to step away from that, what a void that's going to be there. And if you're in a job that you don't like and you just stop working, I don't even know what that's going to look like either. You probably just turn into a couch potato.
Well, there's a huge risk in viewing retirement as a finish line for 2 reasons. Number one is if we view retirement like a finish line, the tendency is to be overly focused on that tape in front of us, and we can miss the journey. We can sacrifice too much as we approach that tape. But the other thing is, you know, what do you do when you cross the finish line? You slow down, you stop, you rest. And that's okay in seasons, but that shouldn't be like retirement, I don't believe, should be 20 years of Saturdays. And there's a lot of people that if they don't have something to retire to, they cross that proverbial finish line into retirement. And they're like, is this all it was? And I think you mentioned, as we're going to release this episode, it's going to be in the Olympics. In another life, I used to train some professional athletes, some mixed martial arts fighters, some Olympians. And I was working with a skier, a professional skier, who he skied for Team Canada, 2 or 3 Olympics. So we don't judge him for that. He's a good guy. But he said one of the most elating moments of his life was standing on the podium and hearing the Canadian national anthem play. And he said one of the most empty moments of his life was the very next day when he woke up and realized if he sacrificed for the next 4 years, every relationship, his time, his sleep, even his body to some degree, the best he could hope for was to be where he was the day before. And he was looking back and saying, was this all there was? Because there was a finish line there. And I think too many people view retirement and financial independence the same way. So, George, we started calling it a job optional lifestyle, where you live independently from a paycheck. Doesn't mean you stop working. It doesn't mean you don't maybe start a new career. Maybe you go in business for yourself. Maybe you stay at your other job because, you know what, if you don't have to go back to work on Monday, the stress that you're dealing with actually rolls off your shoulders. It's easier to deal with the TPS reports and the drudgery at work if you don't have to be there. But looking at it from an independent standpoint, where if you are working at a job, if you're still collecting a paycheck, you're doing it because you want to, not because you have to. And that's where we try to get people, where they have a job optional lifestyle.
You are crushing it, Chad. I love that too. How would your perspective be if you could just walk out the door whenever you wanted? Would your enjoyment, your experience be elevated? Probably.
And, you know, sometimes people get promoted into areas that they don't like. And we've all seen people promoted beyond their level of confidence. Like, you know, maybe you're a car salesman and you're great at sales. Or now they promote you to sales manager. Well, managing salesmen is a completely different skill set. You might love selling because you just, everything about the car, the nuances, the smell, the leather, all that stuff. But managing a bunch of other salesmen, that might steal your soul. But people make those decisions because of the professional accolades and the money attached to it. But if you don't need the money, you'd be like, no, thank you. I don't need this promotion. Hmm. I value the job duties more than I value the money attached to it. We've had people that make really, really good money, retire and go take jobs at like Cabela's and Bass Pro or, you know, working at a restaurant or just because they love it. They love mm-hmm. people. We've got a lady that's getting ready to retire from one of the oil companies. Her and her husband are going to go to remote Alaskan villages to minister, to help with building projects and to teach and things like that. And they're going to be self-supported. So they, because they can provide their own income, they don't need an organization. They don't need a charity, nobody to sponsor them, but they're doing what they love in the service to other people. And George, I just think that if people have that viewpoint, that perspective of retirement as these could be the most impactful years of my life, not only will they enjoy retirement more, they'll enjoy the journey to get there much, much more. Because if my goal to save money for the future is just to quit working, that's going to make my job feel more and more like a drudgery rather than a means to end. Like, because if all I want to do is quit working, I can do that now. The government will take care of me. And I'm not suggesting that as a plan for any of your audience, but our drive, our objective, our goal, our vision has to be much, much more than simply, I don't have to go to work anymore.
Well said. Well, Chad, you've given us a lot of them, but we're ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for us, man?
All right. So kind of going back to this distraction thing, most people are looking at their investments and they're overly fixated on the principal value. The amount of money that if they sold all their mutual funds, all their stocks, if they cleared out their 401k, that's what it's worth today. That's the principal value. Financial independence, a job optional lifestyle, is an income issue, not a principal problem. So people need to be focusing on the amount of income that their investments can produce over their lifetime, not what it's worth at the moment. So just one practical tip around that. If people were to focus on their dividend income, the dividends that their funds produce in their IRA, their 401k, on a quarterly basis, rather than looking at how much those funds are worth on a daily or weekly basis, not only would they be a more patient, better investor, they would also enjoy the journey a lot more. So financial independence is an income issue, not a principal problem.
Well, I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets a come on. Chad, before I let you go, you've got 6 kids. Do you have a wolf as a pet at the house?
We do not. So I actually moved back to the same neighborhood that I grew up, but it is far more popular than it used. It's called Stuckigan Heights, and it earned that name Stuckigan because you might get stuck today, but you'll probably be stuck again in the future. And they've cleaned up the road, so there's about 50 homes up there. Now there's a couple hundred. So we don't have the land. And you know what? I'm raising 6 kids. I don't need anything else to raise right now, but maybe someday.
Okay, fair enough. It was more just a question of would you allow a wolf into your house, and was it an indictment of your parents looking backwards more so than a practical thing?
Well, you know what was interesting is he didn't want to be in the house.
No, I don't imagine.
Yeah, he loved the family, but
it's a wolf.
He liked being out. Yeah, he wanted to run around and chase things in the woods. So that's what we did.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thanks again for coming out. Where can people learn more about you? How can people engage with you?
VeritasAlaska.com is our website, and don't let the name fool you. We got folks we work with all across the country, but we're founded here in Alaska. It's got some cachet to it. And then Veritas.Alaska on Instagram. We're also on Facebook. And if you just look for Chad Hufford on LinkedIn, you'll find me there too.
Excellent. If you enjoyed as much as I did, show Chad your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to VeritasAlaska.com, regardless of whether you're part of in the lower 48 or in Alaska or Hawaii or wherever you are at, go find them on veritas.alaska on social media and get in touch. Thanks again, Chad.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Finally, friendly reminder, never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.